Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ron and Don Show on Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Ron and Don Show. My name is Don Allen. In Studio A, and co-host Ronald A. Edwards is in Studio B. Good morning, Mr. Edwards. How are you doing?
Good morning, Donald, and good morning to our young lady in Manchester, England, who is introducing us on a continuous basis now. She's from Manchester, England. Don, a lot on the plate. I don't know what to say, where to get started. I understand that you have been reviewing and intercepting. There's some controversy, but let me do this before I get into that. Let me send my condolences to families in St. Paul in the death of a mother beaten to death, cut, died of shock, in front of at least two of her children in Frog Town, which for our worldwide audience is a community that is adjacent to what was always referred to as the old Rondo neighborhood. Brutally. Our associates have conveyed to me the bloody scene in the home there when the police finally arrived and et cetera. And then our condolences to the family of a 16-year-old African-American, another one killed, if you will. This is about seven African-Americans or Mexicans, if you will, shot, killed, bludgeoned, if you will, in Minneapolis in the last, 10 days. They're killing them now almost at a rate of one a day, if you will. So to that 16-year-old African-American killed along the 3,000 block of Aldrich Avenue North, John. Just we want to get that information because people say that, you know, we're toxic when we report these kinds of things and et cetera. But we must do what we are doing. Then a lot of discussion about Elon, our congresswoman, if you will, Omar, and she has come home to safety, as I understand it, Don. Is that your understanding also? Her arrival to a big gathering at the airport?
A big gathering at the airport, yeah. Mr. Edwards, and people hugging and kissing her and welcoming her home to her 5th Congressional District. Out of control, 5th Congressional District. We welcome her back. I told Mr. Edwards, since we're talking about her real quickly, I told people, you know, I kind of like her moxie. She gets out there and says what she needs to say, and she deflects a lot of stuff, but keeps moving forward. And it's really interesting, you know, what's going on with her and how the Star and Tribune is, like, putting out hit pieces about her brother and different campaign filings and fines and things like that, and makes me think, Mr. Edwards, that they might be their own candidate that they're trying to push here, to push their agenda, but we won't know that till later in the year here.
I think, Mr. Allen, you are absolutely correct that there is a force within the political Democratic politics of the 5th Congressional District that has visions of her being a one-termer. I think now with the tremendous sympathy as it pertains to her moxie, as you put it, kind of, and her future, that it's going to be difficult to find a candidate bold enough to attack her. But as you said, sir, we still have another almost year and a half before she is up for a re-election, if I'm not mistaken. She's a first-termer, if you will. She does have the protection of some individuals in the Democratic Party, such as, of course, the beloved leader and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi of San Francisco, you know, the Bay Area, and et cetera. But I think that's an interesting observation that the so-called, liberals here in our beloved Minnesota we're probably talking and plotting, to take her out. But I'm not sure that's beyond our pay grade, if you know what I mean. All we can do is bring observations and, of course, our knowledge of factual information is not considered worthy. Let me also say, Mr. Allen, that we are still awaiting a court date for the 18-year-old African-American arrested on the 25th of June here in our beloved enclave and allegedly charged with the murder of Susan Stillman, if you will, in her home a couple of years ago. Very popular in the artist community and et cetera. Very close and personal friend of former council president and longtime council member Bob Johnson, if you will. I'm puzzled by that. Maybe we'll get into that a little bit later in the program. I'm not understanding why, after all of the quote-unquote thunder and blunder, if you will, that this young 18-year-old African-American. And let me just add this, Mr. Allen, for those that, you know, talk in terms of, you know, there's toxic stuff that should not be reported. The attorneys, he has attorneys both in Minneapolis and Chicago, Illinois. Bob's law firm in Chicago has been retained for his defense, if you will, and the county attorney, the powerful county attorney, who, you know, back from his sabbatical alcoholic leave, Mike Freeman, and the Minneapolis Police Department, as I call them, have refused to turn over information, and that is a serious situation, and the word is out now that Michael Patton, the attorney of record for the young man, who's, by the way, we don't know his name because he's on one hand, he's being handled as a juvenile, which means that information is suppressed and et cetera. But our sources are reliable, Mr. Allen, that this young man has not been charged, and one of the reasons is that they don't have the evidence in place. Now, you know, you and I know what that means when we start talking in those terms. They don't have the evidence, but they've had enough time, enough years, if you will, over 4 years, to have put the evidence in place. But the African-American, the right to a speedy trial has been, you know, really dismissed by the authorities. We are being told in the case of this young 18-year-old African-American who allegedly killed Ms. Miller when he was 14 years old, this individual will at some point be brought in and charged as an adult. When it will be, no one seems to know. But the attorneys, both in Minneapolis and Chicago, and I find it puzzling. Maybe we can touch on it later on in the program, why it was necessary to go to Chicago. But then, you know, we have been hearing the rumors about a second murder, right, Don? A second murder that happened after Ms. Stella was brutally murdered in a home. We've been hearing that there was a death warrant, and that a young African American was lured to Chicago, which apparently was his place of previous residence, and there he was brutally murdered and entombed in a building on the south side of Chicago. These are things that we've been talking about for quite some time. But again, phone lines are open, if you will. But Don, I'd like, if you could, a little bit more information. Now, this crime-fighting task force that's headed by the very powerful, and boy, they are powerful, sitting on $2 million of that $20 million, the Minneapolis Foundation under the leadership of the former mayor of Minneapolis, what was this now? R.T. Ryback. What are you seeing happening there? What do you think is happening with this powerful task force chaired by Sandra Smith Becker. Vice chair is actually the vice chair is the chief of our police department. But they are some powerful names. I understand that you were in a back and forth the latter part of yesterday and last night with some of the people who obviously were identified as being members of this special task force to deal with crime violence, including the very powerful crime fighter Sasha Cotton, formerly head of the GBI group. I mean, these folks they don't rest, and they handle a lot of money, Don. They handle a lot of money.
Yes, they do. Yeah, and Mr. Edwards, here goes the problem. Let's take our listeners back to July 28, 2015, where the city of Minneapolis steps up its fight against violent crime. They kind of focus on downtown Minneapolis. They end up arresting 46 people and 47 people, 46 of them black, one white. And people screamed, "Oh, that's racist!" And so they kind of dropped the ball on that. And then you have, you know, these community leaders that are setting up a task force, or self-appointed leaders that are setting up this task force to address crime. You know, and I don't think personally, Mr. Edwards, I don't know if you agree with that. Of course, you'll let me know that it's a logical pathway to address the situation. We know already that, you know, these kids are out in the street. They have access to weapons. They have access to different things that, you know, normal folks don't even think about in some cases. And there's a lot of violent crime going on in downtown Minneapolis, especially when you get a shooting on the rooftop of a high-end restaurant. You know, we have to examine.
Could you help our worldwide listening audience? Because when you say on the rooftop, people just think that criminals were on a rooftop. Well, Mr. Allen, my associate, is talking about a very top-of-the-line restaurant on the top of a building at 8th and Hennepin, which is in the heart of downtown Minneapolis. Just give us a bit of the background on that, Don, as gunmen fired into the crowd and shot two individuals.
Yeah, last weekend, last Saturday more particularly, there was, if you know, downtown Minneapolis has a restaurant called Crave. It's a high-end restaurant. My wife and I have eaten there a couple of times, and I think the bill was like $250, so it's pretty expensive. And, you know, they opened a rooftop area just like they have at 7. And at 7, and this is just my personal observation, I mean, no hit against the businesses, but at 7, they started to get a different kind of clientele when David and Alexis Cook left 7, relinquished ownership, sold 7, and the Susie Steakhouse, and that element has seemed to move over to Crave's rooftop, and so you have an element of people that aren't particularly using credit cards, but have a whole lot of discretionary funds and cash. And it's not conducive to business, so you get arguments up there. You get people fighting and going back and forth. And last Saturday, two people, a male and a female, were wounded by gunfire. And so now the Minneapolis, city of Minneapolis decides that, okay, we're going to create this task force. Now, while black folks were getting shot down on the streets in downtown Minneapolis, I don't think there was any cause to form a task force. But when something happens on the rooftop of a high-end restaurant, you know, they get these people together and they say, we're going to do this. And for our listeners, Mr. Edwards, just to be clear, let's go back further, 2007, 2008. The Northside Marketing Task Force, the engagement, the empowerment zone, all these different quote-unquote task force to address the issue of making a place, giving a place a better perception or addressing crime has never hit the mark. You know, rather than finding jobs for these youth, you know, people 14 to 21. And we've talked about it here on this show, the Neighborhood Youth Corps, which did big, great numbers. And crime was at all-time low when that program existed through Minneapolis in the 70s into the 80s. And then they cut it off all of a sudden. But now these children who can't, who would normally go to McDonald's. Like, let me give you an example, Mr. Edwards. Last night I was driving home. My oldest son demanded some White Castle. So, okay, it's 11 o'clock. I'm a good dad. I'm going to get up. I'm going to go get him some White Castle. And I stopped by the gas station. And I saw a bunch of teenage kids just hanging out in front of the gas station on the corner. You know, nothing, doing nothing. And, you know, we have that BP over here on Hamlin and University in St. Paul. That is a hotbed for drugs and alcohol and doing whatever they do over there. And several stops where mostly, you know, you have Black American and, you know, different folks coming through there to do what they do and live and drive on. There's not an opportunity for these youth. And it's not their fault. I'm not saying they're victims at all whatsoever, but I'm saying there's no opportunity like there was for myself or couple generations behind me, like my brothers and sisters' age, my younger brothers and sisters' age, where they could go step in, have a job, work full time, you know, go out to the mall somewhere, buy something, you know, have some discretionary funds. And so
roller skate rink, things like that, which the African American community hasn't had a roller skate rink. In fact, really, we don't even have a motion picture theater in the Black community. They basically took that away 20, 25 years ago. Go ahead, Don. Go right ahead.
Mm-hmm. So there is there's no access to success and life skills. So when I was a teenager in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul, I had opportunity to work at several fast food restaurants on Lake Street and in Midland. Uh-huh. I took full opportunity. Uh-huh. In 2019, the people working in those restaurants are adults mostly, and they have those jobs because they have to pay rent, they have to pay bills, which blocks out a large portion of the teenagers. I know there's some construction trades in North Minneapolis that want to hire people, but from what I was told yesterday is that a construction union went into a flagship agency and said, hey, you know, can you do some outreach? And there was a demand of like $10,000 a grant to kind of help them do that. And the construction company.
Was this a kickback? Is this considered to be legally a kickback? Something that maybe the Department of Justice should have been looking at?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because if someone's offering jobs for our community, then, I mean, I would say that, hey, if you're an agency, put the word out. You should have some kind of database to get this information out and not try to shake down an organization for $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, whatever. You know, just put the information out. And we don't have that mechanism or that system in the Black community. I just looked at the want ads just in the Star and Tribune, Mr. Edwards, and, you know, only one-third of the jobs in the city or in the state are even listed. So there's many more opportunities. From truck driving, and some people have the argument, well, you know, these Black youth, they don't want to work. Okay, that might be true, but you have to give them the opportunity.
I don't agree with that. I think that that's just a tactic. But go ahead now, Don, you're correct. It's easy to say that Negro just, I mean, we're talking about a race of people that helped build America for free. Oops.
Yeah, exactly.
It was called slavery. Yeah.
Yes, it was. And so we have issues. What troubles me about another task force, from ceasefire to the empowerment zone to the North Side marketing task force to all these things that basically went belly up, is this another attempt to filter money, blood money, from Justine Diamond's death to certain individuals that sit on this committee? That chair that run this committee in or that look down on the lower one-third of the community, are they going to actually do something that helps curb the problems that we're having now? You know, like you said at the beginning of the show, Mr. Edwards, there was a 16-year-old kid shot in North Minneapolis, just in the head, yesterday, because he decided to do something different. He made a different choice, and the people around him did not like it. These kids have run out of vocabulary. They've run out of life skills, common sense. And so instead of arguing, it's just, let's just shoot someone in the head. And nobody in the city of Minneapolis has addressed the guns. I haven't heard of a gun buyback in the Twin Cities since 2010.
Well, there was some discussion a number of months ago that this was going to be something led by Sonda or by Smith Baker. But it really never came to fruition. The last gun buy I saw was 3 years ago, because I happened to be present at a discussion. There it was. We were at North Memorial Hospital. Another young African-American had just been shot and killed, and the head of the then Pillsbury United organization, the leader, whose name I just mentioned, was talking about the buyback, if you will, and how the real slick, particularly Caucasians, were really making money by bringing in old rusty, 44 Colts and 45 pistols and et cetera. Nobody brought in any of the state-of-the-art stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, Mr. Edwards, I sat in Shiloh Church over there on Broadway Avenue when at the last, like maybe 10 years ago, the last gun buyback. And I talked to one of the police officers, and he was really cool. It was a white police officer. He was just really cool. He was talking to me. He knew who I was. Hey, Don, what's happening? I said, what's happening, officer? How you doing today? I said, how's it going? He said, really interesting, because we expected some young youth in the neighborhood to come up here, because it was, if you brought a weapon in, it had to be unloaded. They weren't going to arrest you. They were going to give you some money. And there was a line of old white guys with old pistols and old rifles taking advantage of this gun.
I know.
And I saw it with my own eyes. Okay, so the guns aren't off the street, but you might have some valuable collector items over there, you know? And so
yeah,
it was basically.
Absolutely.
And yeah. I'm not going to say it was the fault of the Minneapolis police at all, because it was not. It was the way the outreach went out, and ergo this task force. What is this task force going to do?
I have no idea. Maybe we can invite Smith Baker. Maybe she is the number two person now at the powerful Minneapolis Foundation. Maybe we can invite her. But, most folks want to stay away from coming on this program. By the way, phone number 347-426-3904. This is the Don and Ron program coming to you from the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, an area under a state of siege. By the way, Don, I'm getting text messages. A couple calls are coming in. People want to raise questions to us about the security arrangements for Congresswoman Omar and how safe things are based on, based on some of the websites and et cetera of extremists, white nationalists, et cetera.
We have a call, Mr. Edwards.
Let's get them in. Let's see if we can get them in. Mm-hmm.
This looks like a friend of the show from the Midwest. You're live on the air.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, sir.
This sounds like Steve out of the Midwest. How are you doing, sir? What can we do for you?
Good. Yeah, actually, I did have a question about Representative Omar's safety now. Do you know anything that's being done to protect her at this point, or protect her family, her husband, children, and the like?
Well, that's kind of a tough question in regards to a part of that, but I will certainly, as a person that handles a lot of the security information, to your question, the congresswoman who arrived here in the city 2 days ago met by a large group of supporters and et cetera. Though I was a little bit puzzled, because I didn't see as many black faces in the crowd at the airport as I would have suspected. But to your question, she Speaker Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, and the district head of the Democratic Party, has asked for special security arrangements for Omar, if you will. And we assume that that has been passed on to the FBI here and the other high-profile security agencies. But we are a dangerous state. We like to pretend that everything is harmonious and et cetera, but we have a very dangerous white nationalist presence here in the state of Minnesota. People don't want to talk about it. In fact, our Jewish senator, Ms. Klobuchar, stays as far away from it as she can. The other senator, Ms. Smith, I doubt knows much about it. But in the case of who is being protected and whose security is being provided for, I'm just not sure with regards to, you asked something about the husband of a congresswoman and her children. They are not together. The children and the husband are not in the home. In fact, the husband lost his job. He worked for the Minneapolis City Council. He worked in the office of the only Latino Hispanic on the Minneapolis City Council. And for some reason or another, he was terminated, and no one really been able to explain that. So security for the Omar family is centered basically around the congresswoman. And so I'm not sure what kind of protection her mother and father and brother, who live on one of our busy South Side streets, what protection they're getting. But Nancy Pelosi has ordered protection for the congresswoman, if you will. I hope that kind of answers your question about a real sensitive situation here.
Yes. Yeah. Also, you had mentioned just a moment ago about the crowd and lack of African-American faces that look like they're. Is there still an issue with Representative Omar and the black community there, lack of support?
I cannot speak for my colleague from the right, Mr. Allen, but I have to say, yes, there is, the wounds is still not healed with regards to the maneuvers that were pulled when now Attorney General Keith Ellison, Attorney General for the state of Minnesota, suddenly resigned as congressman for the 5th Congressional District to run for Attorney General. In fact, it was Attorney General Ellison who brought to the attention of many, not to us here on the Don and Ron program, because we've been talking about it, and people would say, again, we use that term, we were toxic. But it was Attorney General, the Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison, who in a story 2 weeks ago in the largest newspaper here in the state of Minnesota, the Minneapolis Star Tribune, writing about the toxic situation existing, particularly in rural Minnesota. And on this program just a couple weeks ago, we talked in terms of a African-American woman who works for the junior college there in the city of Fergus Falls, which is in Ottertail County, about 180 miles northwest of the Twin Cities, and how she was shocked and surprised at racial epithets and racial attacks made against her and the small number of black students. Only problem was that Fergus Falls, other than Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth, was one of the first cities. Population is about 13,000, Steve, to move in to Fergus Falls. Fergus Falls used to be what was called a railhead, if you will, the big repair yards for locomotives and et cetera. There has been a presence in Fergus Falls, Minnesota, since 1865. That population began to shrink in around 1942, beginning of the Second World War. Negroes' family started moving from Burgess Falls to even better paying jobs here in the Twin Cities at the armament plants and et cetera. But there is still, I'll just give you a quick example of because it you know, was what the Attorney General who talked as if he just realized that there were problems in rural Minnesota and presence, the heavy presence, very heavy presence of white nationalists. When Keith Ellison talked in terms of the hostility and division in rural Minnesota, and for those of us that have lived here for, you know, decades, if you will, it was no surprise, because if you go into particularly certain parts of rural Minnesota, you know, as a black person, you it's clearly indicated that you are not welcome. Now, that has become a pool, if you will, for the creation and development and the birth. I hate to use that term, because if you think about birthers, if you will, and Barack Obama, but the presence of white nationalists does dictate a danger for Congresswoman Omar, even though she is in a heavily populated area of racial mix. But on their websites, white supremacists, white nationalists, and et cetera, have joined the center back to "We will get her." That is the rallying cry now for white nationalists here in Minnesota. And in some regards, Attorney General Keith Ellison has opened Pandora's box to dangerous elements here in the state of Minnesota. So.
Oh, wow. Well, then you're saying that white nationalists have a pretty strong presence then in Minnesota?
Oh,
are they?
Yes, very strong. In fact, white nationalists, we reported that here exclusively on the Don and Ron program 2 weeks ago. It was one of the reasons that they relocated former police officer Muhammad Nord, who, of course, we all know, I guess, you know, was involved in the death of Justine Resnick-Diamond a little over a year ago. Well, it was about a year ago. My God, about a year ago, 2 years ago. He had to be relocated. He is now, according to the white newspapers, he is in a corrections facility, the national security in this particular state, in the state of North Dakota, in Bismarck, which is also the state capital of North Dakota. And so, and that is about 460 miles from the Twin Cities. I guess they kind of pressured Muhammad Nord's family and his father and others that was what they would have to do. Now, when we spoke about the dangers on this program a month ago, that Muhammad Nord, a Somalian, just as Omar was, though Omar did not have much to say in respect or support of Nord. But when we talked in terms of the presence of the danger actually inside of the institution, the maximum security, supermax prison here in Minnesota at Oak Park, Minnesota, again, people said that was news that they did not need to be reported because they feared for the authorities themselves, feared for the safety and the life of Muhammad Nord. Now, that spills over, really, the question, sir, that you just asked, and that is there is a very, very high and dangerous presence. In fact, I have reason to believe, again, I can only speak for myself. I cannot speak for Mr. Allen or anybody else. I have reason to believe that one of the problems that we're having with so many cold cases here, and we just earlier, before you called, sir, addressed the situation in which a 18-year-old African-American is being accused that at age 14 he killed a beloved Caucasian woman, a member of the artist community. the thing that is troubling is that I have reason certainly to believe that some of these cold cases are not black on black, as we are being led to believe, but are being carried out by our hit squads that are operating under the auspices of white nationalists here in the state of Minnesota. And I stand by that based on the information that is available to me.
Oh, okay. Wow. I do have one other, I have a question for Mr. Allen also. I know a lot of Republicans haven't really called what the president said about Omar sending her back and the other three representatives. They haven't really called that a racist or bigoted statement. I was wondering your thoughts on it.
I'm going to speak on it. I'm going to defer first to my associate on the right, and then I will speak from the left. But Don, why don't you go ahead? Because the people are asking the question about, you know, why the GOP is not really speaking out about the statement of, you know, send her back. Go ahead, Don. Go ahead.
Well, I've been black for the last 50 so years. Okay, and this brings me back to a conversation in fourth grade where a white student who's just as poor as we were told me to go back to Africa. And it rekindled some things in my mind besides whooping his butt, because it was in fourth grade. I did get suspended, and my mom tore my butt up when I got home, and dad, for fighting. But it rallied some thoughts in my head, like, why would that even come out of the mouth? Now, I'm not going to disrespect the President of the United States office, that position. I don't care who's in there. But those are words that you don't say to someone when your wife is less of a citizen than Omar Ilhan. Okay?
Correct.
Omar has been an American citizen longer than the president's wife. So if you tell someone to go back, you need to start in your own household, first of all. Second of all, this is getting out of hand because I was listening to a public radio station who decided to, rather than looking for a solution and healing, they were asking people to call in if someone has ever told you to go back to where you came from, or go back to Africa, or go back to Mexico, go back to wherever. And I felt that was a piece of journalism that was trash. Rather than having a conversation about what does it mean, why do people say that? Part of it, and to answer your question, people don't understand. If we stop talking to each other and letting people know where we're coming from, what, you know, who we are as people, you know, that becomes a problem. There's a lot of ignorance out there to answer your question. I did not take that comment lightly, and I thought, you know, in my mind, in my opinion from the right, that it was inappropriate. But you're not going to have tons of Republicans standing up and saying, oh, you know, that was okay. You know, you can do this. He can say that. He can say that because of their position, where they are. You know, they don't want to disrupt their financial base, their donors. And so they're going to be right in the box. And that's unfortunate because that just, you know, that sends us back to the times of white-only drinking fountains again.
That's right. Well, thank you, Don. Steve, let me just indicate I have to concur with my associate from the right as from the left. I thought it was just so provocative, hostile, agitated, and et cetera. But it is the Donald Trump we know. I mean, in fact, he doesn't think well. Donald doesn't think well, Donald Trump. When what he said, send her back, I mean, you know, in the case of Clinton, lock her up, that kind of thing. But in the case of his attack on Omar, what was troubling to me is that Donald Trump, president of these United States, and Mr. Allen made a valid point with regards to not wanting to disrespect the office of the presidency, if you will, though in the history of this country, the office of the presidency, irrespective of who was president, et cetera, has been kind of shy about really taking the lead in the issue of race. It wasn't, you know, until 1863 with a gentleman from Illinois by the name of Abraham Lincoln, you know, that we saw a president really step up and at least say something. And the next thing you know, they had blown Lincoln's brains out. We didn't have a lot of presidents, even up to the present, if you will, who spoke up really on the issue of race. As great a president as the historians call Franklin Delano Roosevelt, it was his wife, Eleanor, that carried the mantle, working with Marion McLeod Bethune and others, and our own beloved Nellie Stone Johnson here in Minnesota. It was the women that spoke volumes about the issue of race and et cetera. So when I hear a man who himself is just, and you need to think about this gentleman, is just a second generation American, all three of us are 10, 11, 12, 13 generations ahead of him as it pertains to being the sons and daughters of America, if you will. The only people that are outflank us are the indigenous people, the red man and red woman, the Native Americans, as they call them. So your question is well crafted, Steve. I think the man was way off base, but he's been way off base going back to the Central Park Five. This is a man who, if he would have had his way, five young Negroes would have been put in the gas chamber in New York State. So that's where I'm at, sir. And so anything else, in case we no. have any, appreciate any other questions, sir.
No, that's all. And thank you very much. I'll listen to the rest of your show off the air here. So thank you.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you,
Steve. All right.
Okay. Again, that
go ahead,
number is 426-3904. That call-in number is 347-426-3904. We have a couple callers that we're holding. You guys call back. We'll get you in right away. Caller, a friend of the show, Dr. M. How are you this morning, sir?
I am very good. Very good. Very good, gentlemen. Very good program. I have just a couple of comments. One, I would like to commend the caller, Steve, for, you know, asking Mr. Allen, as he's a staunch Republican, his thoughts on the current wordings of our president. And I certainly understand, you know, respecting the office of president. But I did want to ask Mr. Allen and follow up to the great, great caller, Steve. Don, are you still a supporter of our president? Is that a question that you're willing to take on at this time?
Well, you know, like, here's what I tell you.
I understand who people are for is a private thing, and I hope to not put you on the spot, sir.
Well, you're not putting me on the spot. This is a good question, because I tell all my Republican friends that I'm not going to waste my vote. I'm going to vote for the winner, who I think is going to be the winner. Looking at the 2020 election, I don't know if President Trump's going to come out on top. I'm seeing Kamala Harris. I'm seeing Cory Booker as people that I am really looking into and watching them. And as far as support, yeah, in the beginning, you know, I expected the guy from The Apprentice, the businessman. And when you look into the economy, you can see that working, but the rhetoric is killing all that positive stuff. You know, so when you ask him, my supporter, I would be a supporter 100% if we could sidestep some of the extra rhetoric, some of the attacks, some of the things that don't need to be said. You know, so with that said, that's kind of where I'm standing right now. I'm not going to sway one way or the other because I hate the fringes of both sides.
Yes, some other questions. Go ahead.
Well, I do. I had another. I wanted to make another observation. I also attended the rally or the meeting at the Sabathany Community Center this past few days ago for in attendance. Miss Ilhan Omar was in attendance at that meeting. I attended the first part of that. And my observations of that are, first of all, it kicked off. And I don't know if any of you gentlemen were there. There was a lot of people there. Auditorium was full. It was packed. And I will say that it was packed with mostly white people, and that there was a group of appearing Somalis that seemed to be the running kind of the show, you know, letting people in, letting people out, that type of thing. And it was kicked off by the representative, city council person, Jenkins.
Mm-hmm.
She kicked it off.
That's her ward, by the way, as you know. Where the bathroom is located, right, 8th Ward.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, sir.
Ward council person gave a stirring speech, just a rousing speech of support for, you know, Miss Omar. And then Miss Omar got up, and the tenor of the meeting really was about Medicare and how she's going to push to make Medicare for all. And, oh, people just, it was a love fest. I mean, I've never seen anything like people jumped up and they were hollering. But when you say Medicare for all, I don't think that the explanation. She also had another person that I consider a ringer, and she's a congresswoman from Oregon, and I mean she is a dynamic speaker. She's a native. I can't think of her name.
Okay.
Dynamic speaker. But the Medicare for all. I mean, to me, it's just a I have Medicare, okay, and it doesn't pay anything. You have to have supplements.
We all have, right.
You have to have A, B, C, D. So Medicare is it's nothing. If you just have that, you have no coverage, basically, but you pay for it. But that was the tenor of that meeting.
And don't get sick. And don't get sick, right. Go ahead.
Well, no.
What was the security like, Cam? What was the security
meeting,
like?
I was actually there, but I left because it just seemed to be such a love fest, as opposed to tackling anything of substance.
Okay. What was the security like? What you were there for half the meeting. What was the security like? Because the white nationalists and others are on their websites indicating that doomsday is coming, if you will. And, people are concerned for our safety, if you will. What was your professional take on what you saw?
Well, you know, there was a strong Minneapolis police presence there. I did see others that, you know, I would think that a lot of the security would probably be, in suits or just inobtrusive. And there were a lot of people that seemed to be watching the event that were more interested in the crowd than meeting. So I think it was pretty tight security there, actually.
Okay. Was her husband and children were they on the stage or were they introduced?
You know, they had who was introduced initially was the Congress ladies, individuals from insurance companies, some state, I think DHS insurance type people were there. And again, I didn't stay for the whole meeting, so I don't know if she brought any family.
I appreciate
members. Initially, yeah.
Right. Okay. Anything else, Em? So the current violence, we had to report at the top of the program, 16-year-old African-American shot dead, 30th and Aldridge in North Minneapolis yesterday. We've got people being brutally murdered in St. Paul and et cetera. Let me ask you this, because you move around, you've been around all your life, and et cetera. Were you ever approached as an example to be a member of the violence task force that was just announced yesterday, headed up by Sandra Smith Baker, and the co-chair of the assistant chair is chief of Medina Arredondo? Were you, or do you have any individuals that you know of, particularly in South Minneapolis, as an example, that were invited to be on this very powerful task force on violence?
No, not at all. And, you know, also being ahead of it's a fledgling nonprofit, Minnesota's Black Community Project, and being president of that and having a long history working with social services, child protection, federal government, private industry, I would welcome the opportunity to at least put my voice into the mix, and I think that's what we need. I mean, here we have people that I think are capable and have experience. Our organizations just seem to be so silent. Our urban leagues and NAACP, I think they're still around. But as you had said earlier, no, as Mr. Allen had said, you know, about jobs and opportunity, you know, there was a time when the Urban League had a program called the LEAP program.
Yes, Labor Education Advancement Program.
Mm-hmm. You could literally walk into that office and walk out with a job. Literally. You could walk in
and
get an interview.
I know that well because I was a member, in fact, chairman of the board, had many great, great members on that. We had a very functional but powerful. Don't have that. The LEAP program doesn't exist. I don't know of any program that exists, if you will. So, but people are saying that this is a new era, and that old-fashioned, the 1950s and 60s is no longer needed, and et cetera. And every time I hear of the death of another person of color, particularly African-American, want to be careful even about the, you know, people of color, I just kind of wonder where the strategy went. That's my thinking. And what happened to the strategy? Because we're always being told, Mr. Allen gave a critique going back to 2008 as an example of all of the organizations that were going to fight crime and violence and et cetera. And I don't know where it is, who the players are. Maybe we'll, Mr. Allen and I will be able to invite the powerful leader of the chair of the organization, Sandra Smith Baker, to maybe come on and speak to us on the air. Maybe we'll be able to get someone from the MPD. I have no idea. But thanks for calling in. I appreciate your thoughts and your observations and your wisdom.
All right. Well, thank you. I mean, it's, as you said, it's a new, they say it's a new era, but the new era, we've been left out. And so we have to turn back to get, you know, we don't want to change the game. We just want to let us play. That's all we want. We just want them to let us play.
Let's play. All right. Thank you, sir. All right. Mr. Allen, do we have any other callers on? We have about, 6 minutes, 7 minutes? We're trying to get a reflection on any number of things. Go ahead, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah, looking here to see if we had any calls, but Mr. Edwards, I need to get this in. I wish Jim was still on the line, but I'd like to know your opinions, Mr. Edwards. Deputy Corrections Commissioner Sarah Walker resigns while being investigated for a complaint in the St. Paul Fire.
This is Sarah Walker, a close associate of the current Commissioner of Public Safety, Mr. Harrington. Is that who you're talking about?
Yes, sir. So
you know,
I'm
not surprised. There seems to be some wholesale purging going on with regards to, and I know you would kind of enjoy this, Mr. Allen, from the right. The current Democratic governor seems to be cleaning house, if you will. Somebody told me that the two people that resigned from his organization have asked to be let back in. I don't have a clue of how discombobulated the Democratic administration is. But to your specific question, if this is the same Ms. Walker that we have knowledge of, and you're saying that she has left her post, is that correct? And where can that be found, by the way?
That's from Minneapolis and St. Paul. St. Paul paper has it. She has a statement here that I'd like to read real quick. It says,
"Go right ahead.
I am unaware of the nature of the origin of these complaints. There are certainly many things worth investigating at the Department of Corrections. All lawmakers should be taking a closer look. All lawmakers should visit a prison and do a ride along with a probation officer. They should pay particular attention to the chronic underfunding of those who work in the community supervision and who are overburdened with extreme high caseloads. They should look at the agent's safety and compliance with PREA, P-R-E-A, and the reducing technical violations that overwhelm and racial disparities. But any suggestion that I was not working or did anything unethical is baseless politics. I am proud of my time at the DOC, and allegations of wrongdoing are baseless and purely political. I welcome any investigation that is questioning my ethics. As a criminal justice reformer who came forward about sexual harassment and working in controversial issues like gun violence prevention, makes me an easy target. I left on my own volition. I am on open book and actually believe in transparency, is her statement. You know, with that said, Mr. Edwards, I think, and knowing Ms. Sarah Catherine Walker personally, she uncovered a can of worms in there. It's just a matter of time before they spill over.
Yes, well, wow. You know, it's too bad she wasn't able to find a foundation. In fact, one of the key foundations that she should have reached out to, because I know that that both of you have a friendship relationship, she should have spoke with you and asked for significant time on this program to convey and expose what it is she's talking about now. I mean, anything now sounds like after the fact. But again, I'm just concerned from the left. I'm really concerned with regards to the purges that are going on inside of the Democratic administration, if you will. But, you know, we are outsiders, if you will, and I don't think you're going to be asked to join any committee anytime soon, and neither am I. But I'm surprised because I thought that Ms. Walker, this is the same Walker now we're talking about, who was a longtime friend of Commissioner Harrington, if you will, Commissioner of Public Safety. We're talking about the same person, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, because I'm in a little bit of shock with regards to her quick departure. But, hey, you know, maybe we'll be able to get the Commissioner of the Department of Corrections. One of the things with the Don and Ron program is that we do not hesitate. We do not shy away from bringing in the voices of power, authority, and responsibility. Okay, so maybe we'll be able to have the Department of Corrections leadership. I know Paul Schneer, if you will, for many years he was chief of any number of departments. He used to kind of be the emergency chief. You know, your department would lose their chief, they'd call Paul. And in fact, he was a very good friend and associate. He and Jason Soule, you remember him, who departed under a cloud from St. Paul City Government. Jason Soule, he, Paul and Jason Soule were real buddies. They used to put on quite a, I kind of called it a dog and pony show, you know what I mean? But hey, you know, if Ms. Walker is gone, you know, hopefully she will indicate what it was that she uncovered.
Yeah, you know, earlier, Mr. Edwards, we have about 3 minutes. Earlier, we were talking about the shooting at Crave. The Star Tribune last night at 10:58 p.m. published a story about the victim of downtown Minneapolis restaurant shooting was involved in an earlier shootout in North Minneapolis. DeMilo Martin, 28, was charged Friday in Hennepin District County Court with one count of felon in possession of a firearm. Said that he walked into a building with a semi-automatic gun and was involved in a shootout, and he was one of the people injured on the rooftop. They alleged that he's a member of the gun gang. So they went into detail on this. The Young and Thuggins, whoever the hell that is.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you'd be surprised. His younger sister, very lovely young lady, was shot and killed in the parking lot there next to the Walgreens in that infamous area of Lindale and West Broadway. You may remember it vaguely. There were at least two other murders that took place in retaliation and revenge. So I know some of the discussion a couple of days ago was that it was really not a surprise that an attempted assassination or hit was made, but young Mr. Martin. In fact, I for the purpose of you know, clarification, I know that whole family. There are a couple of Martin families. This one was the family in which Quinlan Martin and Benita Martin and et cetera were members of. It is a scary situation because this is a part of a long-standing running gun battle that is going on across the city of Minneapolis. And so you're saying that the Star Tribune printed this morning's edition of their paper information relevant to Mr. Martin's so-called
yes.
criminal past. Am I correct?
Yes. Yes, you are correct.
Yes.
All
right. Well, we'll talk about it next week, Don. Let James Brown take us on home.